You're listening to TalkTainmentRadio.com.
The views and opinions expressed are those of the host and guest and not necessarily those of TalkTainmentRadio.com, the management, the staff, or K&E World Network, LLC.
Henshaw and welcome. We're glad you're here for a conversation with Dawn Karima. Energetic, exciting, entertaining, and informative.
Welcome to our show today. I am delighted to be here with you today. My name is Dr. Dawn Karima, and we welcome all of you, all of our friends, to our show today. We have a dynamic guest who is really making a tremendous difference. And so we're thrilled to, thanks to our sponsors, the Adam H. Board of Franklin County, be able to kick off our series about improving Indigenous mental health. And that is filled with wisdom and knowledge and joy that will help all of us everywhere. I'll ask our guest to introduce herself and tell us about herself. Will you please introduce yourself to us?
Kali, everybody. My name is Stephanie George. I am Oneida and French Canadian. I'm an Indigenous midwife and an international board certified lactation consultant. I'm a postpartum depression support person. I'm a mom, a wife, a sister, a daughter. And I teach at McMaster University and York University in cultural humility and Indigenous health.
Wonderful to have you join us. Oh, my goodness. I hope someone has said thank you to you for all the tremendous work that you are doing. But in case they haven't, thank you.
I love my clients. I think the work I do is for the families that I serve. And I hear good things from my clients, so I know I'm on the right path.
Yes. It's a truly great path that you're on. I mean, you have a calling, and it's so important. I mean, children and families are everything, and what you're doing is amazing. How did you come to find this path?
That's a great question, Dawn, because when I was little, I don't even know if I knew what a midwife was.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So my family is one of many stories where my mom was raised in foster care, so she's my Indigenous parent. She was raised in foster care from the get-go. She doesn't know where she was for the first 6 months, and she's one of the lucky ones who had one foster home throughout life.
Yes.
The intergenerational trauma starts there. Well, actually goes back to her dad, because her dad went to an Indian residential school outside of Brantford. So he didn't have coping skills. He suffered depression his entire life, and probably post-traumatic stress disorder. My mom's a big hero to me. When I was growing up, one of her first volunteer positions that she had, when she decided to start working back into the workforce, was volunteering at a suicide hotline when I was, I think I was 5 or 6. So she planted the seed really on to help people where they're at. To be with them in their times of stress and need. And I wish I could say I'm perfect. We all wish we could. In high school, I was one of the student counselors and peer counselors. I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 years after I graduated from university. And when I was there during that 10 years, I had a severe case of postpartum depression with one of my third, where I almost, I was probably, I would say, within 5 minutes of killing myself and the baby.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I was able to find that constitutional strength that I have, and not everybody does have. And I was able to literally turn right. Uh-huh. And make a different decision for my son and I, and, you know, for my whole family. So being in that moment, when I didn't know what I was going to do, the bad side, the sad, depressed side of me truly believed that if I made this choice, I was going to make my husband's life easier. I was going to not be so sad around my kids. He could find, my husband could find a better wife to, like, that was a dysfunctional relationship, I will say, too. So part of that postpartum depression was mixed up in the abuse that I was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
A year or two after I recovered from that depression, the small town that I was running in was doing a postpartum depression support person training, and I was the only person not in the medical community that was invited to partake. Which I thought was very cool. And it was there. And people kept telling me I was strong. And I didn't know what that meant, because when, as much as I love my mom, the dysfunction was very strong. And anything good that I did in my life, she took credit for. She taught me.
Yeah.
She, and it was exhausting. So that baby number three, that midwife was the person who was the first person to say, look, Steph, you've got strength. You know how much strength it took to make that decision? And that changed my life. There was a struggle for us to in Canada to get our Indian status. And I wanted to get my master's studying whether Indigenous women who went through traditional midwives, if they had a lower case of postpartum depression or not. So I called the Six Nations Birthing Center. Because they were the only ones at that time running. And instead of answering my question, she sent me an application package of when I opened that.
Wow.
It was a light from Creator. It's like, oh my, it's like I just knew that's what I had to do. So that's the midwifery story. I'd been involved with La Leche League since baby number two pregnancy. So breastfeeding always was, it's still one of my passions in life. And becoming a lactation consultant in Canada, with the millions of people, Indigenous people that we have here, there are only, at my last count, 8 Indigenous women who are lactation consultants. So it was really important for me to get that training for Indigenous people, but especially for my community at Six Nations of the Grand River, because they needed to see that we can provide culturally inclusive and safe care and still have the specialty, you know?
Oh my. Madomahe, a big thanks for sharing this all with us. I am loving this conversation. I'm just soaking it up like a little sponge. You know, I'm just because it's so much light to me personally. I'm learning so much from you. I don't know if I told you this before, we're friends, we talk, but my great grandmothers were both Indigenous midwives.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And they delivered everybody up to my dad.
Aww.
Yeah. Then I was born in a hospital. You know, but they delivered like anybody you knew, like anybody you could see. they probably
amazing.
Had a hand in it at one point. And I can think of my great grandmother and her big bag. She had a big purse, like a almost like an old-fashioned doctor bag. And if she was getting her bag, that means somebody was going to be born or somebody needed doctoring, they called it. And so this is wonderful what you're doing. I'm so thankful for you, because I think it does make a difference when Indigenous women care for Indigenous women.
It does.
Oh, so much so.
We
tell us about that.
We don't need to hear what happened to our grandparents in residential school and what the fallout has been in the generations after that, because we get it, we live it, we understand it. We have in my community non-Indigenous people work there because we don't have enough like dietitians that are Indigenous. So, I mean, and there's such a strong learning curve. There's been people that have lost half of their clients in 6 months because as Indigenous people, we celebrate the family. We help the family move forward, not
That's
just
right.
the person
That's
who's,
right.
who's got the issue. And we also celebrate every single baby step. You had 7 cigarettes today instead of 8. Oh, my goodness, you're amazing. But if that non-Indigenous person that I'm thinking about in my head is a very specific person, if they said, well, you needed to cut in half, so that's not good enough. I mean, there's a reason she lost half of her clients.
Right. I appreciate you putting it in perspective for us because we have listeners from all different countries and all different walks of life in addition to all our Indigenous loved ones who listen. And they may be thinking, you know, that stuff's just folklore or it's old that old-time stuff, you know. We have science now. We have modern things. So how does Indigenous midwifery work with modernity?
It actually is a beautiful mix. Because my healthcare journey was gestated and birthed at the Six Nations, for lack of, that's a really bad pun, but it's the truth.
It is.
At the I have only been trained on mixing the two.
Right.
I don't know what it's like to be completely Western, and I don't know
right.
what it's like to, because, I mean, in Indigenous people, we have a medical system that is, like far, far older than the Western system. Like our traditional medicines have been there since the beginning of time. And we understand that. We know what works and what doesn't. Like the traditional medicine person that I work with on my reserve, she even will say, well, what Western medicines are you on? Because I don't want to counteract that. And if
right.
it's doing a good job, I will just help this other part. It makes such a big difference. And, you know, with the midwifery, there's like in the Haudenosaunee tradition, we have the welcoming speech after the baby's born.
Yeah.
So the first time I was helping out at a birth, and it was a beautiful home birth, and they invited me in because I was raised non-Indigenous out there. I mean, I knew that I had the blood and I knew my family, but to know the teachings, I only started getting that when I started at the reserve. So this very traditional family, they invited me in and they introduced all of the birth team as this little baby's auntie. And I'm friends with the mom and I check in with the little girl. Little girl can be graduating high school next year.
Wow.
But like in Indigenous ways, it is the extended family. And we have a bigger definition of what family is. I mean, in Indigenous culture, being an auntie is a big deal.
Oh, yes. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
That comes with responsibilities.
That's right.
I mean, in Haudenosaunee way, I mean, we moms would breastfeed and their children till they were finished, like 5, 6, 7. But
yeah.
after the age of 3 or 4, it was the aunties who did the disciplining. So,
right.
like, we listen to our aunties just as well as we listen to mom and dad.
It's why we have no such thing as an orphan.
Right.
Right? Because you always have your aunties who are your mothers and will take care of you. Every child has people who will love them and take care of them traditionally. And I think it's so important that you're placing it in that framework because when we're all related, then no one is ever alone, are they?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like the land belongs to no one because the land belongs to everyone.
That's
you know?
Right.
And the colonists didn't get that when they came over because, oh, no one owns the land. Great, we'll take ownership. It's not what we meant.
No, that's not what we meant. And also, we have nothing. There's no such thing as an unwanted child in our traditional culture because there's always someone who wants to care for this person and sees this child as sacred and wonderful. And
yeah,
so
I mean I'm a blended family. My husband and I married in 2015 and we gave really serious thought to having bringing a child. I mean, I was over 40, mm-hmm. And I have medical issues, so we decided not to. But, you know, if anybody from my extended family said, hey, Steph, do you want a baby? Yes.
Absolutely.
I will help you with that child.
Yes. 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 And that is one of the most beautiful ways, I think, of all of our Indigenous peoples and tribes, worldwide even, you know,
mm-hmm.
is that we see children as sacred. You know, we see yeah. them as blessings and miracles. We don't see them as burdens or trouble mm-hmm. or, you know, they're a gift to us from the Creator. And
they
so
are.
So that's why I love what you're doing so much, you know, and I love the intersections and the ways that it works. And so what happens typically, you know, when you're how do you find your clients? Are they people who are pregnant and they're referred to you? Do they come to you when they're trying to conceive? Are they sent to you by the hospital? I mean, how do you meet your Indigenous mothers?
Yes. Sorry. Yes to all of the above.
The
First Nations Birthing Center is the oldest birthing center in Ontario. So this year it is, in 2021, we celebrated 25 years.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. I've been there since 2004. When I started, we had, I remember specifically, we had 36 clients that year. And now we have 100 plus that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when people are saying that there's been a downturn because of COVID and the pregnancy rate does not
nope.
apply to Indigenous folks.
Right, they didn't ask us.
But so we are entwined so deeply with the neighborhood, with our community. When it started, we wanted to make sure, or not we, as in the community. I wasn't in the community at that point. But they did this birth search, and they asked elders, they asked families, they asked birthing families what they wanted in a birth center. And that, so we are completely community driven. We do not, we are not dictated by the College of Midwives of Ontario. While we do follow the same like safety guidelines and when to consult and when to transfer care and all of that, we are completely overseen by the community because mm-hmm. we don't want to tick the elders off. We want to make sure that we're doing things appropriate and culturally mm-hmm. safe and validating. And we've had some Anishinaabe and some Cree families have their babies through us, and we respect their cultural teachings as equal to ours. It's
mm-hmm.
just because they're birthing on our territory doesn't mean that they can't be respected. So
right.
we have had, we term it, we've got grandbabies now. So we have
yes.
some of our first babies have had babies, and that baby has like we're into third generation now.
Wow.
We have a wonderful relationship with our local hospital, where if they see a pregnant woman come in and they can't, well, because Indigenous people have such a distrust, right, of the medical
uh-huh.
system because
uh-huh.
of all the experiments and studies that have been done on us unethically over the years.
Uh-huh.
They have called midwives in the middle of the night to go help them with a client.
Yes.
Which I mm-hmm. think is so respectful and so lovely and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about shared care, because we are both
mm.
equally responsible for that person. We take care of them spiritually and emotionally and mentally. And if they're high risk, they take care of that part. And it's there's not a battle or it's not a competition. We are. It's definitely collaborative care, and it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's beyond beautiful. I mean, lives are being changed and lives are being saved, and there's people brought into the world who might not have made it here otherwise.
Right.
And so that's why I think it's such a treasure. You know, I wonder, wow, I mean, this model, do you see better health in women and children because of this wonderful work that you're doing?
I will say yes, because
mm-hmm.
If it's not legally mandated, like any testing during pregnancy, if it's not legally mandated, it's an informed choice discussion. In even
mm-hmm.
the legally mandated ones, we do have exemptions to that. I mean, there are consequences from exempting out of certain things, but
mm-hmm.
But women and families that go through the birthing center and through Indigenous midwives, they feel ownership of their decision,
mm-hmm.
which makes mm-hmm. it more profound for them. I mean, in the contract that they sign for our services, in there it says that that the client is responsible for being as healthy as they can be for the health of their baby, and the clients sign on to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most important part of that contract, because it shows that we have responsibility to each other and to that.
Right.
Child.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point. You're right that there is, and there's agency as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it makes such a huge difference. And appointments with us, they can, well, let's just say in pre-COVID times, they'd mm-hmm. be like a half hour to an hour long. However long it took for that client to get their questions answered for that
mm-hmm.
time. That way, when it comes time to the birth, they've met the birthing team, and
mm-hmm.
they already feel safe. There's that relationship of trust, which can help it be a much better birthing experience than going into a hospital, not knowing what OB is on call and having nurses go in and out all the time.
Right, right. Peace of mind for...
Yeah.
You know, people is worth a lot, isn't it? I mean, just
it is.
Mm-hmm. Knowing that someone cares. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference. And you know, my midwife changed my life when
mm-hmm.
she helped me to see the strength that I have. So that's first and foremost. That's how I personally approach my care when I'm on call for. I mean, I am a midwife. I don't do as much of that as the lactation, and I'm on call 24/7 for the lactation. And a mom will say, you know, I noticed, let's say that the poops are getting more seedy. That's a good sign, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just praise her up and down and sideways.
Mm-hmm.
Says, yes, you're draining your breath. You're doing
mm-hmm.
so good, and you notice that yourself. You are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And I have made so many moms cry because nobody tells them that they're a good mom.
Oh, yes. Oh, my goodness. Yes. I mean, I think one of the problems we have in modern medicine is that it starts from the position of illness or sickness or something is wrong. So
right.
even the assessment is, okay, here's what you're doing wrong. You know, here's how you're
mm-hmm.
failing miserably. And so all the time when I talk to moms, I'm shocked at how many of us, you know, feel like we're failing. Like, we're just faltering. It's the end of the world. And yet when those aunties and those grandmas and the wonderful people from our own culture, our sisters, they talk to us, they're like, oh, your son is so happy. Oh, he's
right.
so happy. He must have a very good life because he's they look at something totally different than, is he meeting the right amount of diapers or growth profile or just all these other things.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, how does your Indigenous eye, your perspective, look at motherhood and its successes?
Well, that's a great question.
Oh, thank you.
I think I see it as like a collaboration between
mm-hmm.
parents, baby, and creator. Because
mm-hmm.
when, I mean, our teachings, I know it's different from other nations and tribes, but our teachings tell us that when mom is pregnant, creator is giving that baby so many teachings for life, like not just
mm-hmm.
early things, but things to prepare them for the life that they're going to have
mm-hmm.
on Turtle Island.
Mm-hmm.
And also that baby is also being taught how to breastfeed
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
creator taught these babies how to crawl, how to look, how to feel, how to smell, how to latch. You just need to leave them alone so they can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so much more trust in the baby and that knowledge from the creator than you ever hear in Western medicine. Because when they talk
mm-hmm.
about the breast crawl, it gets to, you know, babies have these reflexes. And yes, it's technically,
mm-hmm.
but it's not. Those are gifts from the creator to get them to the breast to nurse. And when we put it down in terms of our traditional teachings, moms and dads are more apt to like relax and let baby go with the flow and
mm-hmm.
let baby do what they need to do, because it's family life is about trust and about love. And if like my joke is, if someone's going to be force feeding me chocolate 8 to 12 times a day, I'm going to end up hating chocolate.
Yeah,
if you,
right.
If you just put the baby skin to skin, like naked from the waist up for the both of you, in a blanket around you, baby will feel safe. Mm-hmm. And baby will be able to pick a breast and then to nurse. When they're ready, it's the Western thing, like you were saying before, that if it's not feeding or meeting this criteria, then it doesn't count. But there's so many other things to look for other than, did the baby get 30 grams of weight gain every day?
Right.
Because if baby has sopping wet diapers and lots of seedy diapers, the baby's doing great.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate you saying that, because I think sometimes we need those reminders that, you know, human life is much more precious than charts and graphs and data. It's, you know, and I think that's really important. And, you know, one great thing that comes back to me, I was always told that I wouldn't be able to have any children. And so when I conceived and all of that, it was a miracle. I mean, the doctors even called it that. Yeah. But then, of course, there was this part of this is, oh, my goodness, it's so important, right? It's like, it's a miracle. We got to do everything exactly right to make sure it happens and works out. You know, it was a real, there were moments when I was just like, oh, my goodness, what if this falls apart? And what if this goes, you know, my whole life, my only dream was to be a mother. And so I had a high-risk pregnancy. And so, you know, I had lots of doctors involved and lots of tests multiple times a week. And there wasn't very much that I could do except be pregnant, right?
Yeah.
And what helped
me... fitting's hard work.
It is. It really is. But it's a lot of fun, too. But I, one of the most wonderful things, the other shell shakers and the elder women told me, they said, well, now it is the doctor's job to bring your son's body into the world, but it is our job to take care of his spirit. And
that's beautiful.
It was. It really was. It changed it from, oh my God, I want this so much, what if something goes wrong, to, oh. And one of our elder medicine women told me that as much as you love this baby, the Creator loves him even more.
Mm.
Even more. And he loves you too. And he would not give you this hope to simply make you unhappy.
Oh, that's lovely.
And then she compared it to Charlie Brown and the football with Lucy. There's a cartoon called Peanuts, you know, in the States. And she said, God is not like that. He wouldn't give you your greatest dream, you know, and then pull it away from you. We will all help you get him here. Perfectly healthy. I have a wonderful toddler. We love him so much. He's the light of our lives. You know, he was great. You know, everything was fine. I had a wonderful pregnancy, just like a dream. Everything went, you know, I had one contraction and gave birth on New Year's Day. And it was like, yay.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was incredible. But here's the thing. The doctors were telling me, well, here's the odds and here's what could go wrong. And oh, my goodness. And our midwives, our women, our medicine women were saying to me, it'll be all right.
Yep.
You know? And as one elder said to me, she said, I have known you since before you were born. I will never tell you a lie. And she said, I promise you, you'll be a mother. I promise you. And that was just enough. I believed her. I just believed her. I don't, you know, there was no scientific proof, and I knew it was high risk, and I knew I was getting these no stress tests and all these, you know, blood draws, and all these things were happening to me, but I believed her. And sometimes the beauty of what you are doing, my friend, is just that as Indigenous mothers to be and mothers, we believe you. Well, we know you love us, and we know that you love our people, and you love our children. We're not just statistics to you.
Oh, gosh, no.
And so when you tell us it'll be all right, sometimes that's all we need. So it's so beautiful what you're doing. And I wondered if you could share with us, of course, no confidential information, no names, nothing like that. But do you have some maybe success stories or particular client stories, no identifying information, that just kind of stay in your heart that resonate with you?
Yeah, there's been a few. There's a lot of studies out there. I mean, this is pregnancy and lactation-minded, but there's a lot of studies out there that show that breastfeeding can help overcome intergenerational trauma.
Wow.
So I think we need to start working with our families during the pregnancy to help them understand that there's a different way mm-hmm. of parenting. Because with the trauma that our people have had, I mean, I'm only two generations removed from a residential school.
Right.
And there are people that are even closer to that. So
mm-hmm.
we were taught a lot of bad, not bad, that's a judgment call. Because when you're not parented well as a child, that becomes your normal and you don't know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So just dropping hints in pregnancy on a different way of parenting, because parenting a nursling is a bit of a different type of parenting than a bottle feeder. And I'm exclusively mm-hmm. bottle fed, and I praise my mom
mm-hmm.
because that's what she chose, and she did a fantastic job. She never let me down, so she still mm-hmm. had that contact, and so many of her people are afraid of that contact.
Mm.
And what the studies are showing is that when babies, I mean, the studies do say breastfeeding, but I will hazard, I guess, that it will be just that plain skin-to-skin contact with your infant and with the both parents. I mean, there's a lot of great studies coming out right now with men doing skin-to-skin with babies and what it, the miracles that it does to their brain and
mm-hmm.
what helps with the bonding between those parents, those like that side. But anyway, that this, when a parent raises a child not being afraid of intimacy,
mm-hmm.
not being afraid to be held or touched, and looking at life from the safety of a parent's arms, then the world is a better place, because they always have mm-hmm. a safer place to withdraw to when they're scared. So what breastfeeding does is that, it, especially if you're nursing for years and years,
mm-hmm.
it allows that baby to, or the toddler, to see the world from the safety of mom's lap. Or, you know, with dads with the skin to skin, it does the same thing. Having that emotional center with both parents, a single parent, or, you know, as a grandparent, it provides that emotional center for that child to explore the world and feel safe. And,
oh,
and it's a beautiful,
beautiful
thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. Thank you for that. Thank you for framing it in this good way. I am so thankful that you're here with us. And we have to take a commercial break just for a few minutes. But when we come back, we're gonna enjoy some more of this amazing conversation. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Let a birdie they get on their knees and pray her, then pray her, and never look back once the world forgave you.
The hardest thing to do at times is to make changes in your routine. Don't let that hold you back.
Wait a minute. They told us we had it all, Jordan. Well, yeah, I guess in a way we are running out of oil.
I'm Rhett.
I'm Kia.
And I'm Heather.
And we are Three Voices.
You want this drama over here? It's clear. You got Gilbert over here. You got LeBron over here. And guess what? We talking about it.
I'm trying to get over the dog whistle politics thing, because I can't hear it in dog. Supposed to hear, so who hears the dog whistle?
Your opportunity is now to get up-to-the-minute information, great entertainment, and stimulating talk programs on your computer. Yes, I said your computer. Just log on to TalkTainmentRadio.com, click Listen Live to hear a program. The blogs and podcasts are up and running. TalkTainmentRadio.com can also be heard on your cell phone.
Yes, I said cell phone.
TalkTainment Radio. We go where you go.
We are strong, and we'll get through this together, but these are stressful times. Reach out to someone, connect with your friends, and know that you are not alone. Visit wearebroadcasters.com/hope, furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this station.
Hey, it's me, your cell phone. We need to talk about something serious. I know you love me, I know you like using me wherever you are, but I feel like this isn't working out when you're driving. I know you may think that it's possible to focus both on me and the road, but I just don't feel the same way. I think we should spend time away from each other when you're driving. It's for the best.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Presenting great moments in the history of 1-800-FED-INFO. For years, Americans have turned to 1-800-FED-INFO for government information. Make your own great moment. Call 1-800-FED-INFO. It's government made easy.
Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit PeaceCorps.gov.
Yeah, oh
Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees, they pray all, they pray all. Ain't never look bad once the world forgave you.
I love this conversation. Oh, my goodness.
I'm having such a great time. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for coming. I am thrilled that you're here. And so let's start this second half by you introducing yourself to everyone once again, please.
Shukali, everybody. My name is Stephanie George. I am Oneida and French-Canadian. I'm an Indigenous midwife and International Board Certified Lactation Consultant. I teach at universities. I'm a mom, a wife, a sister, and daughter, and I'm so happy to be here. This has been such a joyous conversation.
Yes, good medicine. There's so much I want to know about the good things that you do, but I want to make sure you tell us what you want us to know about what you do.
Mainly what I like people to know when I talk is, and there's an Indigenous people there, and they go, yeah, I get this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard this from an auntie or an elder. This is good. And non-Indigenous people go, oh, I didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like even framing our medicines as being thousands and thousands of years older than Western medicine, it puts it into perspective that we know what we're talking about.
Right.
Non-Indigenous people, I think the media and governments and school curriculum have made us look very childlike, that we need to be tended to and taken care of. But that's through the government lens. We don't see ourselves like that.
Uh-uh.
We are strong people.
Uh-huh.
If the governments would just live up to the treaties and give us the money that it is intended for us, we are sovereign.
Uh-huh.
We know how to move forward for our own people, and having to working with people who don't want to live their side of the treaty deals, that's where the problem is.
I'm glad you said that. Thank you so much for that, because I do think we have such power in our own communities, and we have so much in our own spirits, and yet to the outside world, it keeps getting drawn in a very different way.
Yeah.
And so what do we do to change that? Like how do we make birth and lactation and all of this safer and better for our Indigenous communities?
Find out grandmas in our community that have never formula fed. I found a family who, and there was never any formula feeding in that entire family of women.
Right.
Which is mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm.
To get what the teachings are. And if they've been lost, go to Sister Reserves, go to Sister Nations and find out where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And blend that with proper lactation teaching. I mean, it took me 2 years to study and be ready to sit the exam to become a lactation consultant. And it was worth every time, every moment, because our people around me right now, like they know that I'm based in science, but I know the traditions equally as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really important to keep that in mind. We don't know more. We all know different, and we can work together for the betterment of that family.
Right. And what I love about what you're saying is that I feel sometimes with governments and with hospitals, with traditional science, mountain medicine, as they call it, the goal is control.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to tell you what to do, and you're going to do it. And that will decide for us if you're good at it or not. Like if you're a good mother, you do these things that we tell you to do. Whereas Indigenous community, the goal is thriving.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your baby thrives this way, you know, you might have more than one child, and one did it this way, and one didn't do, you know, one walked this time, and one walked this time, and there can be a breadth of experiences and differences that all add up to a wonderful life for that child.
Absolutely.
Right? So the book says, okay, if they're not potty trained by exactly this moment of their life, they're doomed. They will never have a good life. Or if they don't walk by this particular date and time, again, doom, you know, and no, you're not doomed. Creator doesn't doom people. That's not how it is. So we'll meet people. You'll meet people that walked at 9 months, and you'll meet people that walked at 13 months, and they'll all be happy and successful grown up.
Yeah. You know? I was 18 months for walking, just so you know.
See? And turned out just wonderful. And our traditional people never looked at those things. We didn't look at that and compare people or judge people. Well, she's a better mother because her child is doing this or doing that.
Right?
Right? You know, we met children where they were as individuals. And I was thinking, my toddler slept through the night in the hospital. Like, I mean, he's always slept through the night. He's just wonderful. I would get like 8 hours of sleep, and I was like, this is just great. And people would say, what are you talking about? The newborn phase is killing me. And I'm like, oh, no, I had 6 hours of sleep in a row. And they had two or whatever. And we were talking about how then doctors and society says, well, oh, that's a good baby. He sleeps through the night. No, they're all good babies. They're all good babies.
They are.
You know, they're all good babies.
My kids had me. My kids, I have four kids, and they all woke up every 2 hours around the clock to nurse, and they were in bed with me, so it's like, okay, I'll roll over, you do this side, okay, I'm rolling over, you can do this
side.
It was fun. And I got through midwifery school with my daughter still nursing, so it's only a problem if people make it a problem.
That's right, and let's stop making it a contest, let's stop making it a competition or a judgment on who does what and who doesn't do what. And start making it about how wonderful it is that Creator has a good life planned for everybody, no matter what they do when.
Hey, here's an example. I'm so grateful Creator gave me this because it has made me a better midwife and a better lactation consultant. I have four kids, nurse, same dad, same way of breastfeeding. Baby number two gained a pound a week for the first 6 weeks.
Oh, wow.
He was born at 8. He was 14 pounds. At his 6 weeks.
Oh my goodness.
My daughter, so I have three boys and then my daughter, she probably took a month to gain a pound. But their diapers were always soaked. They always had nice seedy poops. There was nothing wrong. Like Cordelia was at the 2 percentile, where my doctor that I had at that point, she was from South Africa, she wasn't concerned. She says, Steph, everything else. Says she is great and thriving and healthy. And then she said, if you were going to anybody else, they'd be telling you you had to formula feed. But there was no indication. And my other question is, why does Western medicine always go to blaming the mom for milk supply? And doing stuff to bringing it up? Or like in hospitals, if babies, say a lot of our women have gestational diabetes, instead of saying, hey, let's put that baby skin to skin, because Creator made moms and babies to be together and we're symbiotic with each other. And we will bring up baby's blood sugar without a problem. Well, generally speaking, I mean, I'm not saying for everybody, but if they say, okay, baby needs some supplementation, why do they go to the glucose first and not get mom to hand express?
That's right. Right. I mean, see, and all of this is why I am so thankful that you do what you do. And I want to see more of our Indigenous people do what you do, you know?
Me too.
So how can we, really, if someone's listening and they're like, wow, that sounds like something I might like to pursue as a career. We have a lot of homeschoolers and college students and university students that listen to this program as part of their education. Maybe they're looking for a pathway. How would they, I mean, we hear about these things and we think, oh, that would be so wonderful. But now let's get practical. How would we do it?
Okay. There are different, so if you go on to the IBLC, International Board Certified Lactation Examiners, they have, there's three different pathways to become a lactation consultant. Generally speaking, you need a 90-hour course, they are listed because they have to be certified that they are giving out the curriculum from which the exam will be. And then you need hours, supervised lactation hours, and they can be from hundreds, it's usually hundreds of hours. And so that is where Indigenous people who are lactation consultants could jump to the front. Like I would love to mentor Indigenous people to become lactation consultants. Might not be as practical in the position I have now, but Creator has let me know what direction I need to go to, and that is helping more Indigenous people become lactation consultants.
Oh, so marvelous.
Like I said, in Canada, there are 8. In the States, I personally know 3. I know more than that. I'm not saying that U.S. has less than me at all. I just know, like, I'm friends with 3. That's all I'm saying. So find out who lactation consultants are. You can look... on the ilka.org website, there is Find a Lactation Consultant. So you can search by name. I think you can, I can't remember off the hand right now, which is terrible because I'm president of that organization. You might be able to search by place too. And if not, I am on my name on Twitter is My Time at Last. Just follow me and I will help in any way that I can, because this is, I know this is what Creator has put me here to do, because we, Western medicine and colonization and racism and systemic oppression have made us doubt ourselves for too long about what we know, what we don't know, and what we can do or be. And we can do or be anything. We just look for it and find allies that will work with us. So I know Indigenous lactation consultants in the States that do some mentoring, and there's a couple of us in Canada, but the more need there is, the more people are going to be providing opportunities, because Creator is setting us up for success. Creator is wanting us to do it for ourselves, because we are strong, we are smart, and working with the Western medicine and our traditional teachings, we are unstoppable.
That's right. I have so much I want to make sure we talk about, and this is so important to my heart right now. Could you take a few minutes and encourage our breastfeeding community? Perhaps we have someone who's on the fence, you know, maybe they're expecting and they're thinking maybe they'll breastfeed, maybe they won't, maybe they've heard it's hard or that formula is better, or maybe they are breastfeeding right now and they're thinking, oh, this is just harder than I thought, or, you know, just whatever's on your heart to speak directly to our friends, why they should breastfeed, why it's a good thing, how they can succeed at doing it, whatever you would like to, give us a pep talk.
Okay, I'm good at the pep talk. So first thing I will say, if breastfeeding was easy, there would be no lactation consultants. But as you were saying earlier in the conversation, it is it's the competition that makes it difficult. It's, well, that worked for them, why isn't it working for me? So we, you and your baby and your family need to find what works for you within standards of nursing. Does your baby have, like, once your milk is in, does baby have 6 wet diapers a day and pooping 2 to 3 times a day, then you're actually doing really good. Marketing of formula angers me more than the use of formula. I'm totally formula fed. I'm grateful. But the marketing, the immoral marketing of using hospitals to market, or doctors or other healthcare professionals to market formula. Doctor, I know 2 people who graduated from a local medical school as pediatricians, and they had 3 hours of lactation.
That's, wow.
My clients get that from me, like, prenatally, and I can guarantee you it's better than what they're getting at MAC. And other universities, I'm not just saying it's McMaster University. There's very few universities that teach patients. So what you need to know, skin to skin, it's so vital for that baby. The baby knows what to do. We have to trust that the baby knows what to do. Nursing at night really is important.
It is.
The hormone that makes your milk is highest at night. So if, generally speaking, if you're not nursing every 2 to 3 hours through the night, your milk supply won't come in well, and then it's probably going to disappear. I've seen parents stop nursing, and 3 days later they have like 25% of their milk supply, like not nursing at night, just for 3 nights in a row, because I hate the word demand, but supply and demand, but working with that prolactin hormone that night is so important. Now there are safety co-sleeping guidelines, which I don't want to get into because it's, that can be a political discussion. But with the marketing of the formula, know that marketing, they might be adding these, like these probiotics and the prebiotics. There's over 200 of those in breast milk, not just 3 or 4.
Wow.
And the things that are in, there are components in breast milk that are there to develop the brain, to grow your bone. There's healthy cholesterol, there's healthy sugar. If you look at the ingredients in formula, there's a lot of glucose fructose in there, which, you know, the science is saying is a very unhealthy sugar for anybody to be giving. And formula is the most processed food in the world. And, you know, it is life-saving. I'm not going against women's right or parents' right to choose how to nurse. But breast milk is substantially inferior compared to human milk. And with COVID right now, if you get vaccinated in pregnancy, you build up these antibodies that go through your milk. So baby's gets the antibodies through the placenta, but as long as you're nursing your baby will be getting more of these antibodies to COVID and flu and other infections. There's a really great study that came out of the UK, and it wasn't a breastfeeding study. But what they noticed is parents who were able to nurse for a month compared to parents who were able to nurse for a year. The parenting, it's like there's ways to measure how parents and children relate to each other. They were higher for the one-year people that were able to nurse. When those children went on to school, they were more independent. And they were more compassionate to the kids around them.
Wow.
So breastfeeding has lifelong benefits. And it's dose dependent. The longer you breastfeed, the longer and more profound that the benefits are. For moms, we get a benefit too, or dads who are choosing to breastfeed. They, the chances of getting breast cancer for every year, every 12 months you can consecutively breastfeed, your chances of getting breast cancer go down by between 4% and 28%.
Wow.
A year.
Wow.
And it also decreases the chance of type 2 diabetes and heart disease and ovarian cancer. So Creator is blessing us. And one cool thing, all the studies that are being done about infant and maternal sleep, breastfeeding parents that can sleep in bed safely. There are guidelines, specific guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
The breastfeeding moms get more more sleep minutes and that's compared to a formula feeding mom. And in that, we get more high quality sleep minutes.
That's right.
So Creator's saying, I know you're sacrificing. Here, go back to sleep.
And That's right. Oh, how wonderful. Oh, my goodness. And thank you so much for helping us with that and encouraging us with that, because the rest of the world has opinions and ideas and judgment and criticism and all that. And sometimes we just need someone who's on our side to say, you know, you can do this. You got it. You're doing a great job. And one of the things one of our medicine women told me is some things women are going to do and they've been doing for centuries. We need to help them do them safely. We need to help them do them correctly. And so I love it when people give us some help, you know, with how to do these things, you know, and how to sleep safely, how to breastfeed safely, how to just do things in a good way that we were already created to do.
And, you know, with everything that I've just said about all the great things about skin to skin, bottle feeding parents can do that.
That's right.
Like I have made parents cry because for reasons that I completely support her for, she chose to start bottle feeding. But she called me crying because she missed that contact.
Aww.
So how I worded it was, you know, as Indigenous women, we are in charge of the food. Just because a baby's bottle fed doesn't mean anybody else can feed that baby.
That's right.
That baby is yours. And absolutely, take your shirt off. Take your bra off, put the baby in a diaper, and do the skin-to-skin while you're bottle feeding. And she started crying. And I quote her, she said, I didn't know I was allowed to do that. It's her baby. It's her choice. She's allowed to love her baby. Like, skin-to-skin contact helps the brain grow properly. And not properly, that's a judgment word. Grow optimally. So the more touch and love that we can give these infants, we're setting them up on a wonderful path for success health.
That's right.
And mental health.
Oh, yes. Thank you. thank you. What can we as the community do. I'm still breastfeeding our toddler, for example,
Yay.
Because I want him to have the antibodies and all of that. And so someone had something to say to me about that one day. So I got a spray bottle and I filled it with water. And if anybody criticizes, I just miss them lightly. And I just spray them. Yeah, I'm just like, psh, psh, okay, you have something to think about. But really, overwhelmingly, I've had support for that decision, especially since the antibodies from the vaccine or, you know, going into his life and all of that. But it made me think, you know, what can we do other than not say dumb stuff to people who are trying to feed their children? But what can we as members of the community do to support and encourage women who are expecting or who are breastfeeding or who, you know, are at that part in their journey? How can we support our Indigenous sisters?
That's a great question. For me, it goes back to Creator's teachings. And what did we do before the colonists came?
Okay.
So I asked somebody, an elder on my reserve, actually the traditional medicine woman I was talking about before, and she said, before they came, we were in bed naked with our baby for a month, promoting the breastfeeding and the skin to skin. We put the babies in the cradle boards. That's what we have, the Chickamaugans. When we got busy, we didn't swaddle babies before then.
Mm-hmm.
And we would nurse until the baby chose not to.
That's right.
So that's what the teachings are. And it's funny, I've asked other like traditional people, like younger kids who were raised in longhouse, what teachings they got about breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And all they say was, we were just told we had to do it. But I know Creator has more than that, but that just shows what Western society has removed from us.
Mm-hmm.
When the controlling patriarchal type of churches came into our communities and told us we couldn't do that past a certain age or else, then we just stopped.
Mm.
And our doctors would say, you know, I've heard doctors say there's nothing good in breast milk after 6 months. It's just a bunch of hogwash.
Oh, my goodness. No.
It's just
Ooh.
A bunch of hogwash.
We need a spray bottle.
We do. I love that idea. So what can we do is just to remember, go back to Creator's teachings.
Mm-hmm.
Creator's teaching said, as long as mom and baby are happy, that baby can nurse as long as they want to. That child can nurse as long as they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool because colostrum, which is that that liquid that women can leak during pregnancy, and it's the first food that the baby gets at the beginning. It has, for every milliliter of colostrum, it has 2 to 5 million white blood cells, which is our immune system.
Wow.
Million. So,
wow.
When you are nursing, and like nursing through daycare is a great idea because babies are going to be getting sick from daycare, but a breastfed baby gets sick far less. And then when you're nursing like to 3, 4, or 5, there are some studies that are coming out that show that actually reverts back to colostrum. So you are just setting up this immune system to work well for the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Like
we have COVID in the house right now. And
oh my.
All my kids nursed for 3 or more years. I think my daughter got to 5 or 6. I don't remember her last time. And they're vaccinated. They've been okay. So important, whatever, any relationship, but especially our children, because they need to know that they are our future. And where we mess up and we apologize, they learn that it's okay to mess up and to apologize and then to move forward together.
Move forward together. That's exactly what we're all going to do because of this beautiful conversation that we've had today. I can't thank you enough for what you've shared with us and for what you have given us today as a gift, your time, your wisdom, your energy, your perspective, and most importantly, your love for families and for children and for all of us. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much for, Goa, for that. With the abuse, sometimes my self-esteem takes a hit, and I think I'm going to be recording that and playing it when I'm having a bad day.
Oh, well, good. I think that's what we have to do for one another. We have to remind everyone that the Creator loves you, and we do too.
And I thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you to our friends and our sponsor, the Adam H. Board. Thank you to all of you who make this show possible. We love you so much. We're so thankful to you and thankful for you. I'm Dr. Dawn Karima, and I can't wait till we're together next time.
Yeah, oh Lord, can you come and save her? Better believe they get on their knees and pray hard. They pray hard and never look back. What's the world forget?
You've got the power. The world's greatest radio. Talktainmentradio.com.